to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
I want to thank everybody for coming tonight. It's great at this time of year that there's always more people here to express views and see where we're going for next year. We have three presentations tonight, kind of the next logical progression from what we saw last week on staffing and cost of staffing. So we'll kick those off.
Yeah, just make sure you get a copy of the three presentations there. They'll be on the website as well tomorrow. But they are all up there, and if we run out, Kim will not make copies or something. I think we have enough copies, right? But make sure you get them so you can kind of follow along. The board, you have the copies in front of you, starting off in the red folder, and the presentation. And I believe, if I'm not mistaken, a high school principal, Mr. Caswell, are you going to lead off tonight with the administration making progress for academic success? Ready to go.
All right.
Thank you.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to our presentation tonight. So, we have, the last several years, presented to the Board of Education and the community regarding specific academic initiatives and goals and visions. So you may be familiar with this, but I'm going to assume that you haven't seen this, so that's how I'll speak during my portion of tonight's presentation. So what we're going to talk about concerning the high school is what we've heard from our superintendent many, many times is the end game. You know, the exit outcomes, we expect our students that they're going to be graduating high school with the ability to go on to college, career, the military, some type of further schooling, some type of interaction in some type of institution. So our goal is to open as many doors as possible, to create as many opportunities as possible, to make them, the cliche term that you hear, college and career ready. But that's not a cliche. That's what we really strive to do at the high school. So I'm going to show you two types of college-level programs that we've been speaking about for several years. And if you remember, the list continues to grow and grow, so that means the opportunities continually increase and open more doors for our students. But what I wanted to kind of set the framework is every time I speak, especially to incoming freshmen, every December I go to all the 8th grade classes and I introduce myself in January as their principal, and we talk about scheduling and we talk about high school. The very first question I ask and I've been in this career as long as I've been here, who wants to go to college? The hands shoot up. They're like this, right? They have no idea where they're going. They have no idea anything about it, but they know they're going. Now, statistically, pretty accurate. I mean, by the time they graduate, between 2 and 4 year institutions, between the military, between all the trade schools, close to 100% are going on further education. So that's what I consider, who's going to college? They're going to go to some type of school. So statistically, that enthusiasm and those hands pan out. So with that said, one type of college course that we want our students to take advantage of is what we call concurrent. One of my goals, and I express this all the time to parents and to students, is I want you to at least take one college-level course before you graduate. Some students take advantage of that. In fact, many do. But many take advantage of just the one, more than one. They take on more and more courses. So this is one particular type. A concurrent college course. In our case, we have a partnership with Suffolk County Community College. It's called the Excelsior Program. We have one course that we work with Farmingdale. And it would be like taking a course in these institutions, but the only difference is we're taking the course here at Seven Wrenches. The teachers have been approved by the faculties and departments of these colleges, and they take a course, the entire course. They get a grade. They also have the ability to earn college credits. They obtain more than the C average in most cases, and depending upon where they go in terms of college, the chance of getting college credit is quite likely because this is a SUNY program. Suffolk County Community College credits are guaranteed at Suffolk, guaranteed at all SUNY schools, and many, many institutions. So many of our students go on to amass a good number of credits through this program. So on the left-hand column are our current offerings. You go back 5 years, even earlier than that, the list is not as substantive as you see here. A whole variety of different courses in a whole variety of different departments. Last year, I was standing up here talking about astronomy and concepts of nutrition, which was actually a different name last year's presentation, but it was, you know, in the family and consumer science department. And I was talking about how we had to apply. Well, who applies? Teacher applies. Teachers have to be approved by the institution to teach the course. That's just the requirements. So we don't really know if our teachers can do it until we get the stamp of approval. We have an idea. I mean, I've been doing this for many years, so I have an idea. And how do I come about courses? Well, it's kind of a combination. Some staff members have certain expertise and passions. Other times, we're looking for specific programs. So it's kind of like fishing. I cast out a lot of different lines, and hopefully I get some nibbles. And through the years, we've built quite an array of concurrent college courses, as you can see in this left-hand column. They get a grade, A, B, C, D, and they get high school credits, but concurrently, they have the opportunity to pay a significantly reduced tuition rate and perhaps earn credits. So that's the concurrent program. This year, based on staff interests and inquiry and discussions and things of that nature, we're looking to apply for two courses in particular, mathematical reasoning and statistics. The right-hand column, these are kind of our ideas because, quite frankly, the list is getting pretty substantive. We don't have a lot of room left to grow, quite frankly. I mean, that's a good thing, I guess. You know, kind of weird to say we're kind of tapping out, but we really are. But we still are looking for ways that we could, you know, just broaden our opportunities and choices, like I spoke about earlier. So, like, for instance, social media and society. Mrs. Bode and I, Dr. Reggio, we're always talking about how we can, you know, rein in the cell phones and, you know, educate our kids and maybe something in addition to the assemblies that we do. I don't even know if there's courses offered in the subject. Sometimes their courses change. Sometimes their interests change. It's a partnership. So when something opens up there, you might take advantage of it. I'll call Suffolk and say, hey, is there anything we can do with this? That's how it works. So for next year, I'm hoping we'll add two more courses, the ones in the middle column. And again, you know, it's not an exact science. Sometimes a whole different idea is presented to me or someone, you know, comes up with an idea. It's not even on this slide, and it ends up in the next year's slide. So that's a good thing now. So we continue to expand this particular program.
Can I ask a question before you jump to that?
Absolutely.
So is that adding these two in place of any of the current offer?
Nope. All additional.
Two additional sections for electives. Now, last year when we looked, you know, 2017, 2018 pursuits are anatomy, physiology, and music theory, but those aren't.
Yeah, they didn't pan out.
And is that kind of what you're talking about, where we didn't have a teacher to teach them, or there was no student interest, or what?
More likely they didn't get approved.
When you say that, you teacher. Mean teacher was not approved by Excelsior to teach the course.
Right.
Okay.
Right. Okay.
And then just one more question. So when we look at this, just so that I understand, under the current offerings, are we carefully looking to say that each of the current offerings that we've got are, there is sufficient interest and it still has a sufficient academic value to offer it?
Yeah. I mean, every year we go through the scheduling process, whether it's these courses or electives, we always look at enrollment in conjunction with our teaching staff.
Right.
So if we can't run a course because of
limitations. So this doesn't necessarily mean we're going to offer all of these next year. You may go out and say, hey, who's interested in criminal justice, get three kids.
No. We're offering these the last few years, and we just keep offering more and more.
And they're getting these right here.
Right.
Some of them, hey, correct me if I'm wrong, some of them, you actually just replace a current course and make it an Excelsior course.
Yeah, it's an option. Correct.
So it doesn't cost the district any money. It's just taking this specific math course and now make it a mathematics Excelsior course and just changing the title and the teacher has to be credited. That happens quite a bit.
Yeah.
You know, and the enrollment in these, we don't allow enrollment under a certain number. Ricardo, when you get to a certain number, the mass is scheduled.
We have a tight discussion regarding whether or not the enrollment supports the section, supports the course. Additionally, with the assessment courses, one of the things to consider is that the students have an option to take the course for course credit, meaning the unit credit that will satisfy high school requirement and or Excelsior credit.
But it's so student-driven. At the end of the day, this is student-driven. And these are all going now, so the students are taking all
of them. Yes, they are.
Yeah, absolutely.
What does one of these classes cost? Like, if you want to take the for to
get it's like $150 a credit in Suffolk. It's significantly reduced. It is a bargain.
And there are three credit courses.
Well, it could be three, could be eight, depending on like the French and Spanish. There are actually more credits because it goes to both semesters.
So there's a full year.
Summer lab.
Within college.
Right. Summer labs. So it depends, kind of like college, sometimes the credits are more than three. But most of them are three credits.
And we push them to, because we want them to take a rigorous schedule, not because of the credits, although it's great.
Yeah.
But that's not our aim.
Well, remember, going back to what I said, I mean, one of my goals is I want, remember the eighth grade, everyone wants to go to college. Well, if everybody wants to go to college, you better take advantage of college courses in high school, you know? And that's why we try to offer a variety of different types of programs. So that lead in, there's another type of college course, which is advanced placement, right? Completely different, right? It's a whole different program. But we offer a tremendous offering here at Center Richards. So advanced placement courses are through the College Board, which is a national organization. And it is a curriculum-driven, subject-centered course, a variety of courses. And instead of, you'll get a grade in the class, your high school transcript grade, but the College Board is looking at a number. Take an exit exam in May. Kids in Iowa, California, and Center Richards all take the same test on the same day, depending on the course, and they get a grade between a 1 and a 5. 5 being the best, right? 1 being the worst. From there, it's kind of a mysterious process because you may earn college credits, you may not earn college credits. It really depends on where you go, who you are, type of program that you're in. I remember my brother went to Cornell. He got really good scores on his as advanced placement exams, but Cornell didn't take any credits. Now, they love the fact that he took them, though, and that's probably why he got in, but they didn't take any credits. Some institutions, they take scores of 3. 4 or 5, sometimes 2, depends on the college. So, like Mr. Stewart said, it's not to earn college credits. It's for the rigor, the challenge, the I want to go to college, good, take a college course. And if it works out in the end, great. Get some credits, awesome. You know. So, we've continued to add advanced placement courses as well through the years. It's an interesting comparison to concurrent because the requirements to teach are significantly different. Interestingly, if you're certified in social studies, you can teach U.S., global, human geography, government and politics, comparative government. So anyone in social studies can teach those. But there's no test, there's no application, like you don't see applied here. You can just do it. I would put somebody in place in those places that have a passion, have an interest, have an expertise, are trained. You know, so that's kind of on our end. So this is kind of an interesting comparison between the two programs. I don't have to wait around to find out, can I teach chemistry? I have science teachers that can do that. But they better be good, they better be qualified, they better be passionate, right? So, like last year, we have Physics and Computer Science A in the middle column. That's why now they're over in the left-hand side with an asterisk, meaning that was from last year. Now we're running them this year in addition to the courses that you see listed in the left-hand column. Part of that is maybe a new staff member. I'll give kudos to Mrs. Woodworth. You know, we hired her 2 years ago, technology. She came with a fantastic skill set. She came to me and said, I can do computer science A. Okay, she has 2 sections now. Doing a great job, right? We hired Mr. Jeans. I can do physics. Good, you're doing physics now. So that's how business kind of operates at the school level concerning AP courses. So now looking at next year, Mrs. Woodward said, I can do computer science principles. Okay, good, you're in. And statistics isn't necessarily a new course. You go back in the history of Center Richard, we've offered it in the past, hasn't been offered since 2004, But we had enough student interest based on our surveys and discussions for guidance. We're going to be able to run it for next year. So we'll have at least a section, if not more. So we'll be adding to the pretty expansive list of the left-hand column for next year. So
what would be the average number of students in one of these advanced placement courses?
15.
Okay.
Average? 18? It depends.
And we wouldn't run it if it were 5?
Depends.
Very rarely. How many of these were here when you came, Ed? How many AP courses were in the school district?
About half, less.
You just continue to add them. I mean, probably replace courses and make them AP for the most part.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, so it just widens the opportunities. So take concurrent, take AP. Well, that's a pretty good chance that a student can take at least one. And, you know, there's sometimes misnomers that, well, only the smart kids take an advanced placement course. Well, define smart. You know, I mean, take your pick. I mean, I'm a social studies teacher by heart. I'm going to take all the social studies. I'm not going to take art. That's just not what I do. That's not my passion. But somebody that takes art can be just as passionate and smart and intelligent and hardworking. So we try to offer as many different classes as possible to capture that notion, hey, take at least one.
Can you just talk to me for a minute about the kid who takes AP Chem because they want to excel in Chem and gets a 1 or a 2? They're not going to get college credit. What is the academic benefit for them of being in that class versus...
Yep, okay. Chances are that the level of chemistry that they're going to take in college, freshman level, is the same, if not better in high school. Because Mrs. Romain is an awesome teacher, and I've heard this from students directly. They keep their notebook, they bring them to their college course, and their friends are using their notebooks because they have exhaustive content, and they understand that they might not have done well in the test, but it doesn't mean that they haven't learned anything that they can apply their freshman year.
Yeah, and it's a family's decision if you think about it. My kid's in 10th grade and going to take AP European History, although we don't offer that. And my child's going to get a C in a college course in 10th grade. Would I rather him or her get a C in 10th grade in a college-level course or go into a course that they can automatically know they're going to get a 98, 99 average? You know, I think the colleges would much rather see them challenge themselves, especially when they look at our course catalog and say, this child had a so-and-so average, but they completely challenge themselves throughout their high school career. You know, that's my own.
Well, it boils down to choice. It boils down to choice, you know. And, again, I go back to the very simple visual of, you know, the enthusiasm. I want to go to college. And it just, to me, makes sense that they should at least try in high school since we're offering it. You know, and hopefully our goal is that they are finishing 4 or 5 years, you know, when they leave our institution. And by taking, at least attempting these type of classes, again, based on their interests and, you know, decision-making with their counselor and their parents and the teachers, you know, that's why the partnership is really important, so we can foster this notion, we can develop it, and we can strengthen it.
Yeah, and see if they're prepared as well, right? Because, you know, a lot of, you know, college freshmen need a lot of remediation. Right? We agree with that. And that's a problem, you know. And you send a kid off to college, you're all excited. Well, you know, find out that they don't have the ability to really. This shows them in high school if they have what it takes to be able to pass college courses early on.
So, continuing that whole notion of expanding opportunities, that's more on the right hand side. We have CIB exploration slide, and we had the same slide last year, at least, you know, same column. So now I'm going to go to that slide. Now the future is now. So let me, before it looks exhaustive, and it is actually, but I'm going to kind of break it down to some segments here. So on the left-hand side was what was in the middle last year. So, you know, we started this process a few years ago, and frankly, why? Because we were following the middle school's lead. And we'll hear from Dr. Reggio in a little bit after me talking about the middle years program and how that's advancing. But the idea at the high school was, wow, we have all these students that are coming up through the middle school eventually, you know, that are going to be international baccalaureate-trained students. What are we going to do at the high school? I mean, frankly, that's what motivated me. We started getting some teachers involved, and that kind of really spread like wildfire. So now we're really in the throes of this. So I'll walk you through what we're doing at the high school. But I want to give you the background why we started this. And it turns out that international baccalaureate, without getting really into it, like too much, because it's hard to define, but think of it like another college preparatory program. You know, we have our concurrent, we have our AP, now we have our IB. The other offerings are still going to be there, maybe not an exact number, because IB and AP are going to kind of shift, and I'll explain that as we get closer and closer, but all three programs will be in place, you know, in the very near future. So just think about now, I have a whole other third of choices that I've added to the exhaustive list of the concurrent and the AP, and our goal remains the same. We want our students to take at least one of these, and we're going to see many more students take more than one, because they're going to want to take more than one, because it all generates and is based on interest. So, left-hand side. Last year, we really started getting, at the high school, really started digging deep. And we started going to many different high schools that have had established IB programs. You can see the list there. And let's just take a look at the first one, for example. Dobbs Ferry. You know, Westchester County, our first one. We're all bright-eyed and bushy-tailed. We're all excited. We don't really know much about it, but we're like, hey, let's visit this school. Very similar in number, maybe not exactly socioeconomically, but you know, same kind of size school. And the thing that we took away from that visitation was one really, really powerful word. And that's the title here on this slide. IBDP for All. International Baccalaureate Diploma Program for All. We put the for all in there, but we really took it from Dobbs Ferry. So we're like, what the heck does that mean? Because a lot of misnomers and stereotypes about IB is similar to what I mentioned about AP. Like, it's only for people that are really smart and the elite. It's far from the truth. Can an AP course be elitist? Can an IB program be elitist? Absolutely. Absolutely. We can put barriers. We can put gates there. School can do whatever they want. And the great thing about this whole initiative at the high school is that it hasn't been the board telling us what to do. It's been the bottom up. Some schools, in fact, Dobbs Ferry told us, when the program first came out in 1998, this is like a new administration that's telling us this, the previous administration was told to do IB. No one knew why. No one even knew what it was. But they had it. And a handful of students took advantage of it. And what happened was, it was a schism between the have and the have-nots. The IBs versus the people that didn't know anything about IB. And it didn't go anywhere. It was in name only. So the old administration, whatever they did, retired, whatever, new group came in with a different philosophy. They said, you know what? We need buy-in. We need people to understand what the heck it is we're doing. And we want everyone to have a piece of it. We want all the teachers involved. We want the students involved. As many as possible. And we were really inspired by that. We're like, wow, that's something I think we could do at Center Riches. And that really falls in line with our philosophy. Give me an example. And we're looking to do this. Every kid in Dobbs Ferry takes English 11 IB. So every section is IB. There's no choices. It's IB. Every type of kid. Same with math. Every type of kid. So at minimum, every kid's taking two IB classes. That's college preparation. Unbelievable, right? There's still APs. There's still concurrents. There's still electives. Still other programs. Every person's touching that. Every teacher has to be able to do that. The ninth grade teacher, the 10th grade teacher, leading up to 11th grade. Because a DP diploma program starts in 11th grade. But I'm going to explain that in just a little bit. I really want to throw that out there because, you know, there's a lot of misnomers and misinformation. And I want you to think of it in terms of how I set it up, about it's another college preparatory program. Concurrent AP IB. All right? So we did all these things last year. Dr. Flynn Trace and I went to training. Mr. Roberts went to training. You know, we started to kind of break the ice and start to report back to our teachers and start to share. And kind of like, you know, human nature. People are like, what the heck is Dr. Flynn Trace doing? That's so, she's so excited, dancing around, talking about her class. Hey, I want in. I want in. That's what happened. So I didn't tell the teachers we're doing this. Now they're coming to us. Hey, how do I get in? That's bottom up. So thank you, board, for allowing us to do that. So we ended the year going to Sag Harbor, because last year Sag Harbor wasn't on the list. We weren't sure we were going to go. So we finished the year off at Sag Harbor, again, at a small school, more recently started the program. So we're like, all right, we're going to really dive into this, and we reported out to the board, we're going to move forward. And moving forward is the middle column now. So we broke it into two segments. This year, starting 2017, like July 1st, 2017, following the bullet point, we appointed our diploma program IB coordinator, which is Dr. Phil Trace, which you'll hear from in just a couple seconds. All right? We've been going through what they call the pre-application process. We, Dr. Phil Trace, myself, Ms. Angolia, we meet every week. We bring in teachers when need be, and you know we're always, always. This is on the front burners of our school. Now deciding, you know, what's this going to look like and what we have to do to continue to cultivate, you know, the environment to allow this process to really take hold. We are about to submit our application. If it's not next week, it'll probably be, you know, sometime in March. The deadline is in April. So we are absolutely on target. It is a little bit before the deadline that we talked about last year. In addition to the bullet points I just went through, we've been bringing more teachers into the fold, a lot more training sessions. So I wanted to bring up Dr. Flintrace, our DP coordinator, to kind of flesh out a little bit of what we've been doing in terms of professional development.
Thank you. Good evening, everyone. It might sound hokey when Ed says that I've been dancing around the school, but there really is some truth to that. We start talking to people in, we've had a number of PD sections where, because people have been talking about, what is this IB, what is it? So we did some PD, and it was such an interesting type of thing. As we were talking about what it is, more and more of the teachers wanted more of the information. They wanted to experience the workshops and the teacher training that we've been going to, because really when we come back from these training sessions, we're saying, this truly is the best training I've ever had, the best professional development I have ever had, and I'm here 30 years. So I've seen just a little bit of most of everything. This is the future for the students of Center Moriches, because although we offer college courses and although we're giving our students the opportunity to experience college work, a lot of it is done, whether it be a college class with any college affiliation or any AP class, a lot of it is done in isolation. I've taught the World History AP. I teach the Human Geography AP. I teach the College Sociology. When I have those kids, that's my class for that 40 minutes every day. The difference with IB is that the connections are made throughout the entire curriculum. So the teachers now have opportunities to collaborate, to bring our students together, to really make the work that we're doing make sense to students. And the way that I think about this, it was told to me one time by a group of students who were telling us that they have had siblings who went through the DP program in their high school, and they said, AP will get me into college. IB will get me out of college. And that's the difference. When I have an AP class, it's a great experience, and it's certainly higher level work. But the IB tends to the courses more while the students move through them. So there are going to be benchmark tests, and there are oral examinations, and there are written papers, and there are presentations. It's an entire academic program that we would do together with the children. So the benefits to them are tremendous, and it's really an exciting thing for us as we're getting more and more of the teachers trained. What we're doing is trying to really be very sensitive to what courses we're going to be offering the students to provide them with what they are clamoring for. So we're very sensitive to the fact that there's a whole lot of kids now who are really into the STEM. So we want to make sure that they're getting that experience to the best of their abilities, while at the same time being sensitive of the kids who are more the humanities-based or the arts-based, but putting together a program for them that will enrich them. And what's been a really neat experience, too, is I'm sure you're all familiar with the Common App that the students fill out when they're applying for colleges. And now the Common App actually has a tab asking if the students have taken any IB classes. So it's really the kind of thing that's being very well regarded, because the students are having such success. And then when they're going to college, they're being successful there. So it really is a very, very exciting time for us. As Mr. Caswell mentioned, we're going to have the application done definitely within the next month or so. I'd like to get it done even sooner. I've been meeting with Mr. Caswell and Mrs. Angolia weekly, and we play with scheduling, and we talk to teachers about, you know, who wants to go to training. And then we also had a really neat thing happen. In our PD at the high school, the teachers were getting really excited about it. We kept alluding to the MYP, and we've all heard of the MYP. And then they said, well, wait a minute. Could you have the MYP teachers come in and talk to us? We want to know what this program is from them. We want to know who these kids are, what they can do when they get to us. And Mrs. Horshasky very kindly got a bunch of the teachers from the MYP program, brought them up to a faculty meeting at the high school, and they told us. And again, it just continues to build excitement. And it's really neat for us to have this goal, this academic goal, and the kids are already in the building, and they're already getting insights into this, and we're hoping now to be able to continue this seamlessly for them.
Can I ask you a quick question? Just, so you said at the beginning that the PD is the best PD you've done to date, right? So, and then Mr. Caswell said before that at some point, you know, we will shift some, but they will be two and or three programs from Excelsior to AP. So is the PD that you're doing in the IB program, let's assume you were teaching two IB courses and an AP course and an Excelsior course. How does that translate? Is it useful across the board or is it segregated? You don't like that question?
You bet. Oh.
No, it's a great question, Josh. I'm not kidding, because you're just going to become a much better teacher. You're going to be a much better teacher that no matter what you're teaching, I mean, whether it's an elective that doesn't have any college connection whatsoever, because you're not just, like Flintray said, you're not just looking at the content in isolation. You're figuring out how to connect that content to every facet of your life. That interconnectedness is what it's all about. And it's not so much about the content, it's about what the students can do with the content. How can they explain the connections? How could they use the content in their lives based on all the experiences that they're coming through the system with this whole mindset, you know, the international mindset? So I don't care what you're teaching. When we come back with that, you can apply it anywhere. Now, I'll give you an example, all right? Good question, Josh. International mindedness. I told you about this. I was in training, and the professor, you know, asked us, and I was the only administrator in this particular class that didn't have IB. All right, so I was kind of a little ahead of the game, but I was taking this particular course, so I was a little bit at a disadvantage. But it actually turned out that I actually had better answers than they did for this reason. The professor said, "All right, give us an example of international mindedness in your schools." So I go, "Oh." The annual Native American Kuspatuck assembly that we do. Is that international mindedness? And the professor's like, oh my God, yeah, that's great, that's great. And everyone's like, oh, what's that? Well, we have this unique ability to utilize and learn from and embed, you know, a whole different culture into our school. So then two of us said, what if we designed a language program that was from the Unkichug Nation, which I believe like one person speaks, which is Chief Wallace. What if we taught that in an IB class? Talk about IB for all. And this is where it's really interesting. Every school you see on this list is unique unto itself. So Northport's IB program, or Northport's offerings, is different than Center Richards because we're a different community. We're a different school. So we're building this from the ground up. This wasn't a model that was dropped in our house being able to live in it. We get to build it from the ground up. So I don't know if we can pull that off, so don't hold me to it. But you know what? That's the kind of excitement that's generated, Josh, by the PD. So you know what? It's hard to pinpoint exactly, but I can tell you intuitively, it widens our horizon, it opens our eyes, and it gives us the confidence to go outside our self-perceived limitations. How's that? Is that a good answer?
Great answer. And Ms. Ingoli is going to go next with a professional development, some slides, right, that I think we'll talk a lot about that as well.
So moving forward, we're going to submit the application in, you know, week two, 3 weeks or so. And from there, moving forward, 2018, like beginning after we submit the application through the year 2021, we're going to be what's called a candidacy and authorization stage, you know, where we're going to be meeting with a DP consultant, and we're going to be, you know, checking boxes and making adjustments, and very, very similar to what Dr. Reggio has been doing for the last, you know, 2-3 years at the middle school. So we're going to continue to send teachers to training. We're going to continue to do in-house professional development. We're going to start to do curriculum writing projects that's specific to the courses that we're going to figure out what to offer. So we have ideas, we have pathways, we have a lot of information, and as we continue moving forward from this very moment, it's really going to start to come into focus. And this is probably a good visual, and I saw this from Dr. Reggio. So she'll show a similar slide, but with a different arrow point. So we're at where you can see a request for candidacy. We're literally right there. All right? So what does this all mean? This is going to the bottom line. IB decision, authorization, and review. If all things come to fruition as we foresee them, juniors that are going to graduate in 2022, all right, juniors that are going to graduate in 2022 will be taking the first DP courses, and they're going to graduate with a DP diploma. That's the timeline. So you figure out where your child's going to be, but they're coming up. They're coming up in the middle school, and as they come up, the momentum will continue. And Josh, I'm glad you asked that question, all kidding aside, about, you know, is it all about IB? I think what we're going to see is IB has been a spark, but it's going to spread into other areas that we had never imagined. Clubs, which we'll talk about in a second. Athletics, which Mr. Stowe is going to talk about. Areas that we never foresaw, this whole notion of interconnectedness. That's where we're going to start to see. So, obviously, I think you can tell we're pretty darn excited. All right? Clubs, since I kind of mentioned that. Again, the more opportunities for our kids, the more they're involved, the better. We don't want kids on the bus at 158. They're here period 10 for extra help. Sports don't start till after period 10. A lot of clubs do meet. A lot of clubs do activities outside of period 10, whether it's, you know, at night, weekends, whatever the case may be. Am I interested in all these? No. But there are kids that are interested. There are staff members that are interested. So that's how I get names. That's how I come up with ideas. I didn't come up with serious about science. That was Mrs. Nolan said, hey, I want to get kids involved and interested in STEM. They might not think they're a STEM kid, so I want to kind of do a pre-STEM to get them involved in STEM. Oh, okay, Mrs. Nolan, thank you. That's just 15 kids or 18 kids. And they're doing science work with Mrs. Nolan after school. That's great. So I thank the board for supporting that. And just so everyone knows, I mean, I have a list of clubs that are approved, if you will, you know, contractual memorandums of all these clubs. A lot of them predate me. And sometimes maybe a staff member leaves, or maybe interest wanes and times change. So sometimes I can pick and choose and slide this into that slot, and maybe, you know, based on student interest. But for the most part, what you're seeing right now is strong enrollment, strong, you know, activities and interests. And there are other clubs on the, you know, the master list that I don't even need to look at because, you know, things are working out pretty well. But you never know what the future holds. What I'm asking the board to continue to do is add to the list. And these in the middle column came from either staff or from students. I'm going to tell you, Model UN came from me. Why? Because when I went to Miami training, we were talking about this. Like, how is your school offering clubs that widen up people's horizons and bring in elements of the, you know, the international world? And I went, oh my gosh, how about that? Saw him handed by Dr. Flintrace. She went, great, I put it on the list. And I did it in Mount Sinai, too. And it was very successful. Mindfulness and yoga, that came from a staff member. Soul Slaves Honor Society, that came from a student. right? He said, look, we have all these great honor societies. I want social studies because I love it, and I want to apply it. Chess, we've been trying to push, you know, for years. It's geometry and mathematical reasoning, so that's why we put those on.
So let me ask a question. Every club's got costs, right? And it would be phenomenal to run a club for one kid, but obviously we can't afford to do that. So how do you make a decision when you've got these 29 clubs here, you know, plus the rest of the list?
Well, luckily, I've never had a cut. I mean, I remember maybe 7 years ago we did.
Yeah.
About that one time. Yeah. So, you know, like if you said, Ed, you got to cut half the clubs.
This year may be a tougher year than in
absolutely.
The past.
No, absolutely.
To be honest. So.
That said, I would unfortunately have to really go on numbers and not so much numbers, but a depth of involvement. You know, I meet once a week with 30 kids, but I don't do anything outside of that? Do I do things in the community? So I'd have to really drill down and make hard decisions, but it can be done.
So you're asking the board to budget these four, but if they don't, it doesn't mean that a model United Nations might not push out a club that has very low enrollment.
Absolutely.
That makes sense, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And you believe that if you added these four, you would still have enough room, because after a while, you know, you get thinner.
Yeah.
With these four, you would still have high numbers in these clubs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then when do you make the decision? Beginning of the year when you see...
Well, the really budget, when I get my budget. Then
let's assume for a minute that the budget, there was no room in the budget to add four clubs, for the sake of this conversation, but you said, oh my gosh, Model United Nations is phenomenal, as is mindfulness and yoga. Mm-hmm. When do you make the decision? And you know, as you said,
based on
enrollment and depth, right. You look.
Well, we get club reports biannually, enrollment, explanations of activities, things of that nature. So, you know, I get, it's kind of like an evaluation, you know, if you will. So I get to actually, you know, read up, understand, and based on what we see every day, and decide, you know what, that one particular, I'm not going to mention any names because that's not the case. That one club, it's kind of dying on the vine. I think it's time we're going to make a shift. And we have done that, but that was when we, you know, when we had to tighten the belt. All right, so it can be done.
Okay. So the staff members give their self-evaluation twice a year.
Correct.
And they don't receive a check until they do that.
Correct.
Both times.
Yep, absolutely.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, thank you. All right, so I'm going to turn over to my esteemed colleague, Dr. Reggio.
Good evening. Thank you, Board of Education. I'm excited to be here tonight, update you on what the middle school has been up to. So before we begin, I just thought I would put this slide for the Board of Education. I'm not going to go through it line by line, but this is what I call a look back. And I felt like it was important for you to have this Board of Education, really more so to remind you of that top years, where we were, the phases that we were in, so that we can talk about where we're going. As you can see, this is a journey. In 2015-16, we were in the consideration phase. And 16-17, we were a year one candidate school for the International Baccalaureate Middle Years Program. Currently, on the left side, as you can see, we are a candidate school in year two. So I'm going to take you through the left side of the slide first, and then we'll move over to the right side. Again, before we begin, I just want to highlight what Mr. Caswell alluded to. If you'll notice, the slide says IB MYP for all action plan. The reason that why it says that, similar to what Mr. Caswell said, is that in Santa Marta's and really the essence of the MYP program is that it is for all students, regardless of placement, regular education, special education, all staff members, like we spoke about in past presentations. IB believes very strongly that every staff member plays an equal role in the education of a child and holds each equally as far as professional development is concerned. So all staff members, all students, that theme continues through at the middle school, just as Mr. Caswell spoke about at the high school. So if we'll start on the left side, candidacy phase year two. We continue our support and consultation with our consultant. I spoke about this last time. Mrs. Horchevsky speaks weekly, daily, with our assigned IB consultant. The IB consultant is coming for a visit in April, this April, so we're a few months away. And what that is that's really a pre-authorization visit. So the consultant will be talking with us, meeting with us, talking to teachers, walking around the school, meeting with students, and it's a pre-authorization. So they're going to talk to us about what we're doing great, what we should work on before our authorization, and our plans for moving forward. So we're looking forward to us. That's a very big visit for us this school year. Next, we are continuing focus with collegiality, collaboration, and professional development. How are we doing that? Well, first off, the Board of Education should know that as of this month, we have completed all of the required professional developments for authorization. So as I've spoken about in the past, that's Category 1 training for at least one member from each of the IB 8 subject groups, that, and as well as the head of schools and the coordinator. And that has been completed this very month. So above and beyond that, we've actually gone beyond the minimal requirement for authorization, and that you can see listed below. We've had multiple teachers and subject groups get trained in Category 1, and we've moved and begun training Category 2 and 3. So those are listed there in the bullets. We've myself and Mrs. Rochefsky as head of schools and coordinator have been trained in Category 2, health and physical education, language and literature, individuals and society, and sciences. Lastly, I just want to highlight that last bullet. We have Mr. Velotti and Mrs. McCormick. They're two of our special education teachers being trained. They're leaving this week, and they're going to be attending Learning Diversity and Inclusion. So that's brand new this year, sending our special education staff out for formal training. We're continuing with our PD sessions during the professional period, led by Mrs. Rochefsky. We're continuing our unit planning and collaboration sessions for teachers. That's release time. We started something new this year where teachers are filling out like a Google form so they can specify, because release time for me might look very different than release time for Mr. Soto or Mrs. Angoli or different staff members. So the teachers can actually specify what do you need release time for, what can we help you with, where are you? Some teachers may need help with writing a statement of inquiry, and some people might need help on how do I use the rubric to assess my students. So we're actually really specifying the release time this year, as opposed to last year we had like general scheduled sessions, and now it's being more tailored towards the teacher's needs. We are continuing our curriculum writing projects, our collegial circles. We read The Boy Who Harnessed the Wind in the fall, and we're starting Wonder this month. And we are continuing to implement the MYP principles and philosophies into our teaching. The first bullet says implementation and standardization of assessments. Mrs. Rochefsky, actually this month, her IB training, she's doing an assessment standardization exercise where she's taking a student piece of work, and we're working on using the rubrics. So the teachers will grade the assessment, all the same assessment on the rubric, and then talk with a partner, a teacher, compare their grading on the rubric, they'll collaborate as a staff, and then they'll actually compare it to what IB says that how they would grade it on the rubric. So just kind of standardizing our assessment procedures. That's happening at this month's PD session with Mrs. Rochefsky. Teaching through concepts, inquiry-based unit and lesson design, not just acquisition. Explicit teaching of approaches to learning. You might hear teachers refer to them as ATLs. Those can be improved with practice, and they develop incrementally over time. And the idea, those are things such as communication, collaboration, transfer. Those are cross-curricular, and really the idea is for the students to be able to sophisticatedly explain their own learning and really evaluate their own learning. So those are being worked on right now, actually, in our professional development set as well. Community updates, Board of Education.
Before you jump to that, let me ask you a question. If you had to say, you know, so based on the number of teachers that have been trained through PD, through the various categories and kind of the work that's been done across the middle school, what level of lesson, I don't know what the question I'm asking is, which of the lessons, what percent of the lessons that are given each day or each week or each month incorporate that at this date, like as we sit today?
I would say, you can jump into as a teacher in the classroom, I would say that varies classroom to classroom right now and where they are. along their own process and their own training. But when you say like a percent, I think different teachers are focusing on different aspects of what they're learning. So, you know, right now, Mr. Pepe is working on an assessment, and I'm sure, I think one of our slides showed that, but he's working on grading the students on a rubric that he learned that he's doing right now. He had students in and out of his office today, and he collaborated with Mr. Bulger. So I think they're working on that while somebody else has a different focus and there might be infusing the learner profile and somebody else is focusing on the ATL. So I think if you might see, some of it can be clearly seen as soon as you walk into the room. If you walk into the gym, you'll see key concepts and related concepts, and he'll have a statement of inquiry right up there, and some are more behind the scenes because they're grading Mr. Hogan's project with the rubric, so that might not be posted in the front group. So right now, it would be hard for me to put a percent and an actual number on it, but I think aspects can be seen in all classrooms. Do you want to add to that?
Yeah, I mean, it's layered. It's, you know, like Dr. Reggio said, you're going to see some people are using their statement of inquiry, and that's where they're at. Some people are using the rubrics, and that's kind of how we've been rolling out, like, let's try to infuse some of these principles and philosophies into our lessons. One of the bullets there, it's collaboration and experiential activities to enhance inquiry instead of just, here are the notes, copy down the notes, let me consume that information. It's more inquiry-based, and, you know, you'll see the students in clusters and working in groups. And, you know, working with those promos, thank you so much, they are amazing. So you're going to see a lot of different pieces going on. You might say to a student, oh, what's your MYP? And they might say, what? But they're still experiencing those activities. But to quantify it with a percentage, it's difficult at this point because there's a lot going on. We're going to show some of that in our next slide. We have some video clips to show you.
So, like, full integration then would be where you could quantify it and say we're 100% there is when? Is that the end of 19?
Yeah, that's on the right side, so I will definitely get there. You bring up an interesting point, and something that we've been speaking about in our site-based committee, the last bullet. We're talking a lot at site-based, and I know we have some members here, Mrs. Castiglione's on our site-based team, and the screening, and we're talking about how there's a lot of our focus, which IB wants us to do, I think rightfully so, has been on our staff and our faculty and training our teachers. And we're talking now at our site-based meetings on, you know, working with our students because they're seeing elements that they might not be able to say, my school is a candidate in year two of candidacy at an international baccalaureate videos program school. But we have the students able to explain the rubric that that Mrs. Harcheski is using to grade the project, you know, so we're starting to speak with our students about it, and we're talking at site-based on what's the best way to roll that out with our students. So one of the pieces that we're planning now at our site-based meetings is a parent-student MYP activity night, and it's not going to be a night. It's not, Mrs. Horchowski is not going to duplicate the soft slides that she presented at open house with what is IB, because we don't want it to be a boring night for students with a PowerPoint presentation, but we want it to be a hands-on night. So we're going to invite, that will be happening this spring, where we're going to invite parents and students to the middle school, and Mrs. Horchowski is going to lead an MYP night. It's going to be, we're in the planning phases right now, so we have a few different ideas. Our meeting's next week, so we'll be speaking about it more then. But more to come on that. So we want to do things such as that to roll it out to our students so that they can also articulate what our staff can articulate about IB. So moving on to the right side, and I want to share something with the Board of Education, a conversation that's really happening today, day to day. Mrs. Horchowski was on the phone with our consultant yesterday, and she shared that most schools have a three-year candidacy. And that's exactly what I presented last year. If you have last year's presentation, I presented a three-year candidacy. Right now, as of today, and Mrs. Angolia, Mrs. Horchowski, now Ms. Greening, and I, we have a standing meeting every Monday, the whole afternoon on Monday is devoted to IB. And to this week, we believe, and you'll see on this slide on the right, that we may be able to have a two-year candidacy and apply for authorization and have our authorization year be next year. But I just want to be very clear with the board, our consultant is coming in April. So this presentation is February. So it's, that is yet to be determined. So we may go with what I presented last year as a three-year candidacy and have next year be candidate year three. But where we're looking at right now on the guidelines that they gave us, we believe that we may be, because of the progress we've made over the past 2 years, we may be able to be authorized next year. So that decision won't be made until the consultant visits with us in April and she brings further guidance on the authorization visit. So I will update the Board of Education after that visit. But tonight I'm going to talk to you just from what the materials we have been given as if next year is our authorization year. But I'll have a final answer at the end of April. So assuming next year is authorization year, we would apply in the fall. Again, that could be the following year, but we will apply. Our goal would be to apply for the fall MYP authorization, appoint and train an MYP community project coordinator. I spoke about this last time, and that's a community service piece similar to the CSIP program at the high school, but the idea behind the community project coordinator, it's not done individually. It's more done collaboratively as a school or groups of students in eighth grade. Develop and implement the plan for the community project. Different schools do it differently, as Mr. Caswell was speaking about, that I be at one school is certainly not I be at another, so schools do have individual some discretion over what that community piece looks like for their individual school and community. So we'll be planning that. Continue the support with the consultant and our focus, like we said, on collegiality, collaboration, and professional development. Category 1 training will continue for those that have not yet been trained in Category 1 or for new staff members that join the middle school, and will continue 2 and 3 for those staff members that have attended Category 1 training. Utilizing our conference days and professional periods for professional development, that will continue. Targeted release time will continue. Curriculum writing projects and our collegial circles. So our authorization visit, if we are able to apply in the fall, will be next spring. And the decision we find out in summer or fall based on your authorization visit in the spring. The work for the next 3 years after that, so IB does 5-year reviews. So when they actually, I authorization visit, give you an action plan. So our following 3 years of our 5-year plan will be based upon the action plan that we receive at our authorization visit. That will guide our practice and our goals for the middle school. So if that plan was in place, then we would be looking at full implementation 19-20, and we, the next couple years we're preparing for 5-year review, and going off the action plan would actually be our action steps for our moving forward to middle school. Next slide is that same timeline that I showed you last time and that Mr. Caswell showed you before. So that red star is where we are right now, request for authorization. So we are, as I said before, this slide reflects our goal, but that red star, the request will either be made depending on the authorization, depending on the consult visit in April, will either be made in this fall or the following fall. I'm going to introduce Mrs. Horcheski, our IB MYP coordinator, and she's going to share a few photos and videos of IB and MYP, and you'll see this come to life.
Teresa, you want us to come around and sit over there?
Oh, sure. It'll be better for you guys to have
the videos board. You might want to sit up in front of them. You can see it over there. But I'm here just Josh.
So I used to look at this process as a marathon and not a sprint, but I'm starting to change my mindset a little bit and think of it as like a decathlon, because every time I think I'm done with one thing or one thing's in process, oh, there's more to do. So, but we have some really great things going on in the middle school. These are just some of the pictures of some things that are going on. Math is so much fun. That's Mr. Schauer. He really loves his math. Down there we have Ms. Flynn's English class. They're working collaboratively on their myths, which they love, writing their myths, which is right up top over there. The one photo with the trees, that is from Mr. Bolger's immigration unit. He actually looked at immigration in America through the students' own immigration stories. So the students all had to make family trees and interview relatives, and it was really, really very exciting for them. And lastly, we always, every year since I've been here, we do this Read Around the School event. We've changed it a little bit since we started. We used to do these kids would fill out these things and then they would go around the whole school. But it was just what the students were writing. What we decided to do this year is we printed out all the book covers, so when they walk by and see what everyone's reading, they might, you know, be inspired to read the book. So it's very exciting there. So these are just some things that are going on. You know, just pictures to show. Now I'm going to show you some videos. The first couple of videos that I'm going to show you are two students from my classroom. Number one, I'm going to say I love these kids. They're so cute. And you'll see, I've watched this one video like a million times, and I think I say the same thing every single time. But what I've been doing is I've been using the rubrics with our summative assessments, and I was like, you know what, I really want the students to be more well-versed in the rubrics and how they can use that as a tool for feedback. So I decided just for some smaller, more formative assessments that I was going to use the rubric. So they're being graded on the organization rubric, which is Criterion B, and really just note a couple of things. Well, note really one thing. The rubric is, the way they talk about the rubric is in positive terms. It's not supposed to be a punitive tool. It's supposed to be a feedback tool. So the students can kind of see where they are, what they're doing, where they need to go, and how they can move throughout the levels. So if you want to start the first one.
So in English, we're doing this project, and it's on the book and the play Anne Frank, and we are writing about it, and we're being graded on this rubric, and it's the things are minimal, adequate, competent, and sophisticated. In order for something to be sophisticated, it has to effectively organize opinions, and competent means it's okay, but it's not as great as sophisticated, and then adequate, it's like a level down. And then minimal is you didn't do as much work.
So they're in the process of working on their project, but they're also engaging with the rubric as they're doing that. And then you'll see Brennan.
The difference between competent and sophisticated is the level of detail. Sophisticated has more detail and thought put into it, and competent is still good, but it's not as good as sophisticated.
So we'll show this one video in a second. I just want to preface with every year since I started here back in the dark ages, not really, but a million years ago, I feel like I've been here. Mr. Pepe has always done this college and career preparation unit, and it's morphed many, many times over that time. Last year, he and Mr. Bolger collaborated on an MYP unit, and I thought their unit last year was great. This year, and this is, again, one of the beauties of MYP, it really calls for you to reflect. So they reflected on what they did last year, and they're like, hey, we can make this even better. What they used to do is they would do an interest inventory, they would research some colleges, they would research some careers, and then they would make a PowerPoint or write an essay or just something along those lines. They're still doing all that, and they're still making a PowerPoint as their formative assessment, but their summative assessment is to go on a mock college interview. And the inquiry really is not like, where am I going to go to college? The inquiry was, how am I going to get there? And this is an eighth grader. This is a little bit of a lengthier video. And she's going to talk about some of her college prospects, but also what she's going to do to get herself there. So, really great.
So I'm going to talk about the social studies career project. My Hans code that I found was ASE. I'm 34 artistic, 26 social, and 8 enterprising. Based on those, I chose two careers. One was physical therapist and one was actor. I think I chose actor because I am really artistic, and then I chose physical therapist because I like to work with kids and I like to work with other people, so I thought that was based off my social aspect. For a physical therapist, my best college that I chose was NYU. My mom had recommended that college because she was a physical therapist. And then for actress, I chose Juilliard for my school. For my goals, I probably would just want to talk to my family and my friends and get some advice from their past experiences on all the stuff that they did to help me achieve my goals. Because I've always wanted to become an actress and I've always wanted to work with other people. So those are really like what my goals are based off of. So I've always wanted to get into like AP classes and stuff to help me have a widespread view of all the colleges. And yeah, that's pretty much what I always wanted to accomplish. And then with the goals, I've always wanted to like be able to get into one of the higher ranked colleges because I've worked so hard with like my grades and stuff, because I do have a 4.0 GPA right now. So I've always wanted to be able to get into those AP classes and the honors and receive some college credits in high school, so then it could maybe boost all of my college experiences and the job that I end up going towards.
Who spoke very articulately about, you know, where she wants to go and how she's going to get there. And lastly, Mr. Slipstein just came back in January from Category 2 Health and PE training. He was so excited about this NetGames unit that he's working on. He called the students over to talk about the concepts that he's working on through the NetGames unit. And really the focus is, yes, they're playing badminton, but what are the larger concepts that they're learning through this activity. So he's
going to
just kind of share that.
Badminton these couple of weeks, and we're in a big net games. Badminton these couple of weeks, and we're in a big net games unit. So up here we have some related concepts for badminton and all the net games we're playing. Who can raise their hand and tell me what do you think these three words, what do they mean to you? There's movement, there's choice, there's interaction. You can give me a little idea, Robert.
So movement is how you hit the birdie over the net or jump.
Excellent. So movement is, I'm sorry to cut you off, Rob. Say that again.
So movement is how you move to hit the birdie or not.
Right.
And what's the teammate doing, which leads me to choice. Choice is, well, if you choose to do all the work yourself, choose to do none of the work, or choose to split the work between the two of you.
That's an excellent answer, Rob.
Interaction just is how you tell your teammate, or your teammate tells you, or how you split up the court.
Anybody have that? There's really good stuff. Anybody else have maybe a different view on what these three words would mean to you, Mark?
Movement leads to exercise your legs and all that makes you stronger. Choice means whether to hit it or not. Let's just say it looks like it's going over the line. You have to choose to either hit it or not hit it. And interaction means like interact with your partner and say if you got it or they got it or something.
Really good. Now, what about interaction? Can interaction be positive? Can it be negative? What are some other aspects of interaction? We're in a net game. We did talk a little bit last week about like the etiquette for net games, how players warm up. What do you think? How can interaction be in a positive way, Emma? Okay, communicating with your partner. One of our learner profiles. Yeah, you want to encourage your teammate, and when you're playing in a net game and you have an opponent, you know, you have to show good sportsmanship because you're refereeing and playing at the same time. We have six matches going on today at one time. Okay, these are things to keep in mind. Great job. Let's go back to our court.
So, as you can see, it's not just about
hitting
the playing badminton, they're kind of working through the concepts and kind of applying them to other things. And, you know, we're really kind of at a very exciting stage in our candidacy. I'm really proud of our students and all of my colleagues for all the work that they've put in. Like I said, we've done a tremendous amount of work, but there's still a tremendous amount of work to do, and I thank you guys for being very supportive. There you go.
Thank you. It's just amazing to me. As you can see, the students were not prepped at all that Mrs. Hrochewski took the camera and said, tell me about the rubric. Tell me about your social studies project. And it's great to see what their just natural reaction was. And the revolving door, the girl on the top right, Megan, when she's talking about the project with Mr. Bulger and Mr. Pepe, and I'm sure Ms. Freeman will talk about it in a little bit, but Mr. Pepe has had a revolving door of 8th grade students and is personally interviewing each of the 8th grade students this week at their summative assessment, and I'm listening to the, he's doing, as Ms. Hrochewski said, mock college interviews, and they're coming in, and I see them rehearsing in the main office, and it's like they're waiting for an interview, and they're feeling the nerves, and it's great, and they have their note cards, and they're rehearsing and practicing, so they're not just reciting the PowerPoint like they were before. They have to know their PowerPoint slides, but now they're applying their knowledge of the colleges and the careers that they've researched and putting it forth in an interview. So it's been great to witness. My last slide.
Hold on.
Is clubs. Let me just get it back.
There we go. Okay.
Is the club slide at the middle school. So similar to Mr. Caswell, our current clubs are on the left. Four clubs recommendation are added, or asking, I guess I should say, are in the middle. And I just want to note, on the bottom of the left-hand column, you'll see five new clubs set for 17-18 school year. Jazz Chorus, Jazz Band, Youth and Government, Knit and Crochet Club, and the Coding Club. Those clubs, you'll see last year at the Board of Education, we didn't add five clubs to the budget last year. What happened was we added three clubs, and two of them were, what Mr. Stewart, you were talking about, was a swap. So I had the two clubs when I went through the club enrollment at the end of last year. I had two clubs that had very low enrollment. I also had two clubs that students, and you'll see TBD, student generated, inevitably, every year, at the end of the year, I have students come to my office after this presentation and ask for clubs that they really want to join, and they have other students that are interested. That was Knit and Crochet Club. I had students that really wanted to learn how to knit and crochet. They spoke to Mrs. Lang. They spoke to Ms. Connolly. They know that they do it on their own time. Those teachers are willing to be the advisors, and they want to knit and crochet and do like philanthropy. They want to donate the items to, they said, you know, we want to make blankets and donate them to the homeless, and we want to make little caps and donate them to the hospitals and the NICU. So that was their idea. And the coding club, I had sixth graders very, very interested in coding, wanting to do more with coding, expand on what they did in science class. So I took two clubs that were the lowest enrollment and really not as thriving as the others. You'll see that were on last year's that are not on this year's, and did like a swap, a replacement. So we definitely do that. I know you asked about that before, Mr. Professor, so that does happen. That's why we have three additions and two swaps, so five new. And then IB FYP Community Project, that's what I spoke about before, that community service piece. History Club, Mathletes, as you can see, we're trying to target a club in each of the subject areas. So we have a science quiz bowl now, we have a book club, so just a wide variety of students. I'd love every single student to be in a club. So student-generated club, I leave that for the students' interest. And also I am contemplating like a survey for students that are not currently in a club, by a group of students that are not in any clubs, asking them, what club would you join? If you could create a club that you would definitely want to join at middle school, what would that club be titled? And Athletes Helping Athletes is on the right. That's a club nationwide that has high school students kind of mentor sixth grade students and push into classes, and a debate club. So it is now my pleasure to introduce Ms. Greening, our director of athletics and the local dean and coordinator of grades.
Okay, well, good evening, everyone. First, I'd like to thank the Board of Education and District Administration for giving me the opportunity to fulfill the critical role of Director of Guidance for the San Marcos School District. And secondly, I'd like to thank my administrative colleagues for embracing, supporting me, and welcoming me for this new transition. For the past 2 years, I have watched my administrative colleagues present this administration, making progress for academic success. And I think asking the guidance department to be part of this presentation speaks volumes as to the importance that the Board of Education, our district, and the community places on the integral role that the guidance department actually plays for our students, their students' growth, the development, and our students' success. While listening to my colleagues tonight and the excitement that exudes them as they speak about the NYP program and the IB program, I can't help but think back to a presentation that was given last year where Dr. Patty Flintface talked about the Theory of Knowledge course and how that course in the IB program kind of ties and brings everything together. And the guidance department is similar to that course in a sense because it's what brings everything together. The guidance department is responsible for ensuring that our students are ready to lead productive lives when they leave Center Merchants High School. The guidance department plays a crucial role in making sure our students are on the correct academic path, have the appropriate support, and are sufficiently challenged as a means of maximizing each student's academic success. The guidance department works actively with the students on their college application process, career planning and readiness, social-emotional learning, and much, much more. And it's one of the reasons why Mr. Caswell often refers to the guidance suite as the hub of the high school. So thank you for letting me present tonight and for realizing the importance of the guidance department district-wide. The timing of my appointment to this position couldn't be more perfect. For those of you who are unaware, several amendments have been made to the New York State school counseling regulations, and they will be effective beginning of the 2019-2020 school year. And while this is, you know, over a year away from implementation, I felt like it was very important to share with you some of the aspects of the new regulations and some points that I felt were most noteworthy, because they will definitely be a driving force in the Center Merchants Guidance Department's five-year plan. If you want to read the full regulations, I put the link at the bottom of the page, and this will be available on the website tomorrow, so you could read all the regulations, all the changes, the amendments to the regulations. But these were a few that I felt were most noteworthy. So first of all, each district shall have a comprehensive school counseling program for all students grades K through 12. The comprehensive plan will ensure that we are meeting our students' academic needs, personal, social, emotional needs, as well as properly preparing them for life beyond high school, whether that be college or career. The program will include a scope sequence, a set curriculum for each building and grade level to ensure the counseling standards are being met and we're preparing our students for future success. One of the first components of the comprehensive school counseling program that I wanted to highlight was that each school district shall ensure all students in grades K through 12 have access to a certified school counselor. When I first read this, my heart sunk a little, not because having a guidance counselor at elementary school is a bad thing, it's actually a great thing, but I know there's always a concern for us when we think about staffing and our budget. And at this time, what access need is not clearly defined by New York State. So we're waiting for further guidance as to what access means in a sense. And within the next couple months, I know it was promised to us in November, but we still haven't received that document yet. So in time, we should receive something from the state, and that will help clarify it and help us plan and move forward. Right now, though, I am attending every workshop that is available on these new regulations. I joined the Directors of Guidance for Suffolk County. I'm attending meetings on a monthly basis. And as I said, it couldn't be at a more perfect time because all of us are in the same boat. We're not behind any other district. All the directors of guidance are in the same position. All the counselors are in the same position. We're learning, we're discussing, and we're collaborating on how we are going to be able to meet these mandates within our guidance department. The second point goes along with the first one. In grades K through 5, the program will be designed by a certified school counselor in coordination with teaching staff and appropriate pupil personnel services. Throughout Suffolk County, there are not a lot of elementary schools that have guidance counselors in them. However, reading these first two points, it's clear that there's a concerted effort or push towards that. And, you know, I can have my thoughts as to why this might be occurring. The social and emotional issues that our students are experiencing at an early age are increasingly complex, especially with the role that social media plays in our students' lives. And this really warrants an increase in school psychologists, school social workers, and school guidance counselors. In addition, for our students to be successful in the secondary campus and beyond, a strong foundation of knowledge, attitudes, and skills are needed, which, as we all know, the earlier that we create those, the better. So after reading these first two points, I think it's clear that we will need additional support at the elementary school level, and I'll be working with the guidance counselors, other directors throughout the county, as well as with district administration to determine what that will look like in Center Bridges. The next point I really love. In grades 6 through 12, school counselors will provide an annual individual progress review plan, which will reflect each student's educational progress and career plans. As Dr. Reggio explained before, she was explaining that a project that Mr. Pepe is doing with his students right now. An incredible project. And, you know, really spends an extensive amount of time working with students with their interest profiles, career exploration, goal setting. But he doesn't create a formal plan for them. It's a project that they work on. It's a great learning experience for them, but it's not a formal plan. And what this does is that it really recognizes that each student is an individual and that they have their own plan for a successful academic career in the Center Bridges School District and beyond. So if you think about into our classrooms, our teachers recognize that our students are individuals. They have different learning styles, they have strengths, they have weaknesses, and our teachers are experts at differentiating their instruction to ensure our students meet their academic potential. And our guidance counselors are basically doing the same exact thing. They will help our students set goals, plan their courses, apply for colleges or colleges, apply for scholarships, get involved in different activities, community service projects, participate in internships, and more. By formalizing this plan, it's almost like our guidance counselors will be working with students and creating an individual education plan for success, you know, throughout high school and beyond. And the last point I put up there is great because it really mirrors my leadership style. I love committees. Creating committees, I think, really creates an opportunity for all sides to be heard and to be understood. It provides time to look at what we already do. It gives us our opportunities to celebrate our accomplishments and discuss ways and plans of how we can do things better. It's a way for us to reflect, synergize, as we continuously improve ourselves and work towards shared goals. As an assistant principal at Clayton Huey, I was the chairperson of several committees, including the Character Education Committee, the Scheduling Committee, Student Behavior Management Committee, and the TAC Committee, the Teacher Administration Collaboration Committee. And these committees did tremendous work and made many positive changes. We locked arms, we worked together, and we achieved goals. And that's exactly what I plan to do with creating an advisory council for the guidance department. In fact, anybody else out there right now, I just created a grant writing committee, district-wide committee. We need members, so if anybody would like to join, just send me an email. I'd be happy to share some information with you because that's definitely going to benefit our district. We had a great turnout for our first meeting, and I'm looking forward to additional meetings. All right, I have one more slide to share. And I don't want to go too long, but I really want to share a few tidbits about how the guidance department is moving forward and how we're going to meet these new regulations. So moving forward, The Board of Education, I think you should know that we are now, we began meeting as a department on a weekly basis. Our meetings have proven to be very fruitful, and the guidance the guidance counselors have been very welcoming. We are working to enhance the monthly calendar of guidance activities. We have already started to do this, and we'll continue to work on this. We'll be happy to share an updated guidance calendar with everyone. And we do plan on putting that on and making it available on the website eventually as well. We are working to enhance the department website and communication tools for parents and students. We've already begun to do this. If you haven't been on the website recently, if you go onto the Center of Richards homepage, on the top tab menu bar, there is now a tab for guidance. And we really push for that because we want to make, we want to increase the ease of access, basically, and the accessibility for students and parents. So we started to work on that. We are also considering what we're going to do to ensure that the communication is very effective, you know, whether or not we're creating Google Classrooms, using your mind, but we want to make sure that better communication is definitely improving. We are creating a department mission statement. So far, we've had career path A's have been something they have done in the past. We've had a few, but we really, speaking with the guidance counselors and administration, we want to make a commitment to make this, to ensure that this is a monthly thing, so that we have a career path A on a monthly basis. We want to make sure that we're exposing our students to different career options, and we think that that would help achieve that goal. This year, we have the guidance department has taken our students on 2 college visits. We hope to go on 1 more. But moving forward, we really would like to have 4 college visits planned each year. Recently, Lisa Hessian and I attended a workshop on Naviance, and we were excited to see some additional features that Naviance has to offer. The students, and there were additional tools to help them on their career path, a college selection process. There was a great tool called Road Trip Nation, which gave students opportunities to really research different career options, colleges, look at interviews of different people from throughout the nation. So some really great things that are there that we want to ensure our students are utilizing.
Can I ask a question? So
sure.
As we look at all these, you know, great things that we're, you know, we're adding and we're, you know, tracking. How are we tracking success and growth specifically? Like, you're here next year and you come up and you say, these are the 5 metrics that we've grown. Like, you know, we look at advanced regents, we look at mastery rates in regents, we look at passing rates in regents. So from a guidance perspective, if you had to put together, you might not know the answer right now, but I'm just curious as to, you know, is it college acceptance rate? Is it scholarships? Is it the level of college acceptance rate? Is it career readiness in some other fashion? How do we know
we're
winning?
That's a great question, but like you said, there's so many different components. It's almost, and part of, with these new amendments, it is that each component almost is that there is, as a team, you're supposed to develop a way that you would analyze whether or not it is successful.
So is the advisory council going to say, here's what we believe success looks like, and then we can measure and say, are we successful?
That's what I would envision. I mean, I'm still learning, and I know there's still some explanations that have to be given to us, but that is how I am envisioning it. And one of the workshops I did go to, that's what it looked like. It was, you know, it was basically a measurement of success and then reflection and how you were going to improve and move forward.
Yeah, I mean, it may
be. But you would need one for every different component, and that's why these the comprehensive plans, the ones that I looked at, are extensive.
Right.
I mean, this is going to take a long time to develop. It's going to require a lot of effort.
But then, is that, like, when you have those measures of success, when the plan is prepared, that plan is, I'm trying to understand, that plan is prepared, it's effective 1920, so we're talking, gets prepared over the next school year? The plan, is that the idea?
our hope would be to work on it over the next year and a half or so.
Great. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. No problem. Okay, we were talking about enhancing utilization of Navia. So including some features that we aren't currently using, we will begin using them with our students, and also using Naviance at the middle school. Mr. Pepe and I are going to a workshop next week on utilization of Naviance in the middle school level, and we will slowly incorporate these in Naviance with our 8th grade students in the near future. And this will be the perfect opportunity for that work that he did to become a plan, a formal plan, where it can then go into Naviance, and we can see whether or not those students are reaching the goals that they set for themselves. 8th grade college visit, we think it would be great to get our 8th graders on a college campus. Then we're looking to make this happen in the 2019-2020 school year. Also, having our 8th grade students attend a college fair. We have our next college fair is coming up in just a couple of weeks. And Mr. Pepe and I will be, definitely thinking about how we best can incorporate our 8th grade students in this educational event. Developing district-wide and building-level comprehensive school counseling guidance plans that meet the new state regulations, as discussed on the previous slide. Ensuring all of our students, K-12, have access to a guidance counselor, as we discussed on the previous slide. And like I said, at this point, we don't know exactly what that will look like. Improving the aesthetics, accessibility, and functional capacity of the guidance suite and college room. People laugh when we talk about feng shui. but if you've been in the guidance department, guidance suite lately, definitely lacking in that area. And, I'm working with the guidance counselors right now, district administrators, and we're really looking at the space that we have to determine how we can best utilize it, make it more aesthetically pleasing, make it a little more student-centered and user-friendly. So, in time. Establishing the advisory council. We are also working to develop and utilize exit surveys and alumni surveys. Lastly that I put up there was to organize alumni college chats and develop alumni college connections. Which I think would be great if we could have, a list of students that we know from our schools that attend different colleges, and when our students go to either visit the colleges or show an interest in them, we can kind of set them up with somebody that graduated from St. Mary's, so that they can have a formal line of communication with somebody from their own community. This is just the beginning. There's so much more. We're working on scholarship offerings, summer programs, internship opportunities. One of our students was just recently accepted to a Harvard summer program. So there's so much excitement right now in this department. And I'd be happy to come back, in a couple of weeks, months, and share some more things. But it's a great time in the guidance department right now. And, I'm really proud to be part of it. So that's that, and I'm going to hand it over to Mrs. Hardwick and Mr. Ritchie to tell you a little bit about.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So at this time in Clay and Huey, we would usually have everybody do a brain break.
Right.
So just kind of like mentally prepare yourself, shake it out a little bit. So we are really excited, although we're not dancing yet, Dr. Flintree, so I guess she would. But we do have a point because we want to be dancing. So it's just always so exciting to hear so many of the great things that are happening at the secondary complex, because as we know, we work hard to make sure that our students have the strong foundation so that when given these opportunities, they are really ready to soar. So one of the things that we have continued to work on, and of course, special thanks to Mrs. Greening for really spearheading the Huey's Heroes program, but we continue to grow. So you may be hearing some of our youngsters talk about the Huey's cash that they're earning, and now we have a school store open monthly. So there's always some new additions to our character education program. And one of the things that we're most proud of is that this isn't something that came in a box. This is something that our teachers and our stakeholders have really taken ownership of. And one of the new components that we're looking forward to is getting the students involved and having them take leadership opportunities. Our Roadrunners program, once upon a time, is called our Mighty Milers. So they would just kind of clock their walking, and we want to encourage healthy activities. But what the Roadrunners program does so nicely is we've incorporated exercises. So it's just really about a healthy lifestyle and not just the walking and clocking the miles. So we have them engaged in really fun activities during their recess time. Another great addition this year has been our Lego clubs in second and third grade. It's also the first time that we've ever introduced a club at the second grade level. Most of the clubs are in the fourth and fifth grade levels. We added third grade last year and second grade this year. It was so successful that we actually had to break it up into two groups, an A group and a B group, because so many students wanted to be involved in it. So that has been very exciting and very successful. We have been super excited about our AIS math support, even though we have, of course, provided AIS support in the past. Now we have a full-time individual at the primary level. Math support started right out of the gate. I see that I have some of my first grade friends in the audience and could really attest to just how powerful that is, that youngsters could be brought together in small group, and so much of it looks like play. You know, that they just have so many great manipulatives, and we really see progress being made for our youngsters in that area. Very exciting, and thank you, Board, for your support in adding that position this year. And our in-house professional development continues to be really exciting. One of the things that I love about a lot of our professional development opportunities, and I'm sure that Mrs. Ingolia will discuss this in more detail during her presentation, is the in-house experts that we're building. I mean, we really do have so many teachers who have so much to share. And it's not just their expertise, it's their passion. It's their passion for Cinema Ridges. And I think that we really heard that from Dr. Flintree's, from Teresa and our building principals, where people are just so dedicated to center. Like, they just love being here so much. And so to turn key to their colleagues has been very, very powerful. So in the area of TC writing units, social studies units of inquiry, as well as just enhancing math instruction and really continuing to look at our own practices, to continue to investigate best practices, and to get some of those best practices right in front of our kiddos. And I'm going to introduce another addition this year, which is Mr. Ritchie.
Thank you. So a couple of more points of things that we currently have going on that are very exciting. We do have, not only is this something that we're excited about within the building, but it also aligns with our building and the Board of Education's goals as well, is that we had our first annual STEM event that we had in conjunction with the high school students. So the high school students that were part of the Math Honor Society were actually able to come to the school and did a full day activity with our fourth and fifth grade students, which was an unbelievable experience for all of them, to the point where we sent out a survey to the teachers to get some feedback on the program and kind of walked around the classes afterwards to see the response that we were getting from the kids. And a lot of the teachers were telling us that they literally had to peel the kids away at the end to get them to go back to the classroom because they just wanted to stay and continue to do more. So I think that speaks volumes about the success of that individual activity, and we're looking to build more activities like that in the future. So on top of that, you know, one of my new experiences coming to Cinema Ridges School District. In my previous district, we did have a lot of committees and things like that, but the number of them, like Ms. Greening was talking about previously, that the amount of buy-in that the teachers have in the building to want to be part of a bigger picture of communicating with the administration to be a part of the whole. We have so many committees that are helping to make our school at Clayton Huey a really awesome place for the kids to learn and grow. So we have the math committee, beautification committee, character ed, family engagement for non-English speakers, the TAC committee, student behavior management, and scheduling committee are just a few of the bigger programs that we have going on. Okay.
And adding to that, and once again, thinking of the board goals, we added a BLESS committee this year because one of the board goals was going to be to investigate the possibility of bringing a BLESS or a FLEX. So for those of you who may not have been at our previous presentations, BLESS is foreign language at the elementary school, and FLEX is more of a foreign language exploratory program where students would be exposed to multiple languages. And so we had a FLESS committee this year, and we also will be implementing shortly a PYP exploratory committee. So one can't hear all of the great things that are happening at the middle school with MYP, which was certainly contagious to the high school. And so people at the elementary level, the PYP, it's like, well, what's that? And what's MYP and what's IB? And I think that we definitely have some questions at the elementary school. And so we would like to start investigating as well. And so another committee will be coming soon to our elementary school this spring. And when we investigated the FLESS and the FLEX program, we wanted to really provide options to the board and the district administration because there's a lot to consider. So we talked about things from having to hire, increase our FTEs to where we had a push-in program at the primary, to where we would have perhaps in the cycle of the special wheels for fourth and or fifth grade, to maybe just a club, you know, that could expose students to different. And I think it also speaks to Mr. Caswell's conversation about global-mindedness. You know, just understanding that there are cultures out there beyond what we are originally exposed to and being able to celebrate those and understand them. And I have to say that one of the exciting additions, and I'm going to be the clicker while Mr. Ritchie talks about it, but we know that the board really wanted to, one of their goals was to really enhance our communication with the community and to really be able to celebrate all of the things that have been taking place in our learning community. So in walks Mr. Ritchie, and I have to say, technology, you know, I'm the old school. Technology is, I'm not, what they call the kids the natives. I'm not a native. So a lot of this thing I'm learning, I think Mr. Ritchie could be considered a native because within the first week, this website was up and running. And we kind of got a chuckle from it, but now we all look forward to seeing, all right, so what did he put on the website today? Is my classroom on it? So I'm going to turn it over to Mr. Ritchie while I click it to show you what he's done while he explains.
Okay, so the original mission of the website was just to be able to kind of have the teachers be able within our own community to kind of just understand that they weren't the only ones that were putting the hard work in. There might have been other really great things going on in the classrooms that, you know, oh, you see a picture about something else that was going on in somebody else's class and maybe it sparks an idea somewhere else. So just tapping into everybody else's passion and really also one of the things that if you actually scrolled through all of the pictures and things that are on here, I've only been here for like a little over a month, and there's like an event of a day at Clayton Huey, which I'm sure everybody could prove that that's true, but it really kind of just speaks to how well-developed the school is as a community. And really, it just gives the kids an opportunity to see that there's, you know, how they're growing, and it's almost like our little time capsule. So that was the original vision, was just for us. So now we've linked it to the district's Clayton Huey page. So if you go to the district page, click on the Clayton Huey tab, access to this page will be visible now. One of the other components, based off of the principal's tea that Ms. Hardwick and I had a couple of, what was that, 2 weeks ago now?
Mm-hmm.
Some of the parents at our meeting were saying that they wanted to have more opportunities to get involved in the school, come in and support the school in any way they could, whether it was getting into their kids' class or actually participating in volunteer activities. So there is a parent volunteer tab up there now where you can actually go on, fill out a Google form. There's me with my technology stuff now.
He loves Google Forms.
Yes.
We are completely moving forward with Google Forms.
And I keep them short. I try to keep them short. But the idea is that you give us some feedback and we'll try to figure out where in our schedule we can fit you in so that you can kind of give back to the community and help us in the school to make some of these really special events that we have even more kind of awesome for the kids. There's also information about clubs and some other things, but this really is kind of something that's still in its infancy stage, so if anybody from the community has ideas about how we can utilize this space to make it more accessible to you or more meaningful to you, please feel free to reach out to us, and it's pretty easy to kind of modify the website to give you basically whatever you need on top of what's already on the district's page, too. So that was a cool little addition. Okay, so continuing on to 2018-19, some of the things that we would like to be working on next year is to continue what was already a very well-established program with the Huey's Heroes. There are so many different components to Huey's Heroes, so our character ed committee is currently in the process of revisiting some of those pieces to make sure that we keep the program alive and we keep it meaningful for the students. Because sometimes we have these character ed programs, you give a kid a buck, okay, good job, go back to your classroom, and they think they did really well, but is that kind of like a long-lasting meaning for the students? So we're trying to find ways to make sure that those extrinsic rewards that we're giving are starting to turn into intrinsic values for the students as well.
We're hoping one day they say, keep the buck.
Yeah.
just doing that good deed is enough. That when we hear a kid say that, we know we've done well.
So again, along the lines of the board goals, we did try to include the STEAM and culture clubs, as well as some of the other clubs that we already kind of have going at the school at Clayton Huey. So those were some of the new ideas that we had. And I think that the STEAM idea, in conjunction with some of the other, the science lab building that we have going on, is really going to kind of tie everything together. So with the science lab that we have, the construction should be completed with full utilization by 2018-19, which we're very excited about. If you are in the building at any point and happen to pass by it, it is massive, probably about the size of this room at this point. And we're trying to kind of meet with certain people. Mrs. Soto is going to meet with us and a couple other people. We have groups to try to figure out how we can maximize that space to make it as meaningful as possible for the students.
We have our own space to feng shui, so we're going
to work on that. So one last piece here. To enhance and enrich opportunities for students through technology and Google Classroom. This is something, obviously, we have the website and things like that we're doing on our end, but we're also trying to get the students more comfortable with utilizing some of the technology in the classroom. A lot of teachers in the building already have kind of jumped on board and wanted to take the initiative just to learn on their own. How can we use this to make it meaningful for our kids? Because nowadays, everything is on an iPad, on a touch of this or that, whatever it is. So we're trying to tap into some of that passion on the student side to make sure that we're kind of keeping them engaged and giving them a better opportunity to understand the content.
And it was funny because as Mrs. Greening was talking about, you know, a person who's possibly, you know, guidance counselor for the elementary level, all I can think of is Michelle Pripe working on her guidance degree as we speak, because maybe that's a possibility, I don't know. But she really has had every student in grades 1 through 5 that she interacts with. They've been on the Chromebooks, they know how to log in, and so it's really incredible to watch what she's able to do with our youngsters. And so next year, we will have something related to foreign language. So whether that will be an additional club or, hopefully with the support of the board, we will see something implemented at the elementary level with regard to foreign language. And then based on the conversations that we're going to have this year, we understand that it's not just the conversations in the committee, but exploring in terms of introductory workshops to see if PYP is something that we wanted to pursue. And based on those conversations, when we move on to 2019 through 2022, what our five-year plan looks like is going to be really based on those conversations, because we don't know where are they going to go. You know, it seems like it's been very successful at the middle school and the high school, but as we know and we always say, the elementary has their own unique cultures, challenges, curriculums, and so we just have to make sure that the faculty believes, just as Mr. Caswell said, the bottom up, if the teachers don't feel that this is the direction that we should be going in, then if their buy-in is critical to the success. So that's yet to be determined. If they do believe, then we will certainly, in a similar process, be attending Category 1 workshops in 2019 and beyond. And, of course, that will include PYP site visitations as well. So whether or not we move forward with it, those site visitations will give us a lot of the information that we need to help us make informed decisions. So those will definitely be happening. And bring it home.
So, and then just a couple of other things that we, this piece we actually are kind of ahead of the ball. The teachers are already in the process of implementing and creating their own units of social studies and science units of inquiry, where we're looking at a different approach of how to teach the kids these content areas in a different way. So rather than regurgitating information, we're going to flip the classroom, have the kids do the research, and give us the information back that they found on how these things connect back to bigger concepts, bigger themes in social studies and science, which is very exciting, and it's already, the teachers are starting to build some, you know, interest in, and their own levels of inquiry with regards to that too. And then finally, we would like to continue to develop our STEAM initiatives to get kids more involved, not just in the after-school programs and clubs, but also in activities during the school year. I currently am still teaching a STEM curriculum design course at Hofstra, so this is my passion big time. I love getting involved in this stuff, big, messy projects that the kids have to kind of get involved in and create their, using their own creativity, they come up with projects and designs through engineering concepts, which is really important for, in my eyes. So that's that.
Great. And so we've already spoken about the clubs, and so I will bring up Mr. Thode.
Right, everybody's excited. Before you're out. So before I get into the athletics, I just want to kind of point out, when I got hired, many of you know, I basically oversee all the special areas, whether it be facts or technology, business, obviously phys ed, health, music. And it's important to note that my charge was from the Board of Education and the superintendent, with the help of my colleagues, to kind of grow these programs, all these programs, not just the athletic program. And as Mr. Caswell told you earlier, you know, we had tight belts when we first got hired here as far as finances and what we were able to do. So before me, in my assistant principal job, Mr. Soto, Ms. Singolia, they have been very helpful preparing me to do the things that I've been doing in a lot of different programs. So for the board, although this slide is just for athletics, I would like to have our music staff, some of our special area staffs, come in to describe all the things that are growing in those programs, because our kids are more involved, whether it be through the clubs that you've seen tonight, whether it be through initiatives, whether it be through performances or artwork that's being displayed at different venues and so forth. So I'd like to do that at some point in the future, just because I feel... just giving an athletic slide is not really the true picture of everything that we're doing. So we have grown all those different programs, as you saw from Mr. Caswell's, whether it be the college classes, Excelsior classes, the AP classes in some of the special areas, whether it be electives that we're forming in phys ed or health that are related to social issues, emotional wellness. We're looking to expand to deal with the present-day situations that we have with our students, with your children, and it's an ongoing, fluid thing. And without the support of the Board of Education, Central Office, and all of my colleagues, it wouldn't be possible, because there's so much intertwining of our jobs, whether it be through guidance, or working with the social workers, the psychologists. Mr. Caswell and I had a student today who had made a bad choice, you know, but the play is something that is his hook. And we're constantly trying to find the hooks for each child, because it's so different. And unfortunately, and fortunately, depending on your viewpoint, athletics tends to be this, you know, major focus in school districts, but there's so many other things that we're doing that are so important, because athletics isn't for everyone. And it's not always the most successful thing for many of our children. So we have to find those hooks, and we are building these programs in all the different elective areas, which is fun for me, because the elective areas tend to be the things kids like to do. You know, they don't necessarily always like the math class or the English class or whatever. Some do, and that's wonderful. So we're constantly building. But I'd give future presentations to the board and the public about how we're growing those programs as well. So I know we've been here a long time, and I know there's more to come. So I just wanted to point out from the athletic slide, our current varsity teams, our current JV teams, you've seen it up there while I was speaking, our current middle school teams. This year we added, from last year, a second boys volleyball team, which is underway right now. We've added middle school intramurals. We also currently have added two assistant varsity coaches to the lacrosse programs, contact sport, and as you'll see for next year, I'm requesting additional assistant coaches in the other contact sports just to help grow the programs. We have quite a bit for a smaller school. As you see on the right, those are pretty much the only things we can add besides fencing. Fencing is another option. Fencing happens to be probably the most expensive and the most difficult to build because it's very unique with a coach and whatever else. But so these are things that we would like to do in the future as far as 19 to 22. Next year, we're looking for those coaches. You'll see at the very bottom, there's an individual competitor. I just added that today because I had a parent reach out to me. For those of you who are not aware, you're allowed in certain sports to have an individual competitor, meaning we don't have our own team, we don't have a swimming pool, we don't have a coach, so we can go through a process of having somebody who privately swims swim for our school in meets. So basically the way that happens is, let's say Ward Melville swimming against Hop Hog, they organize a meet for all the kids from all the schools that don't have a swimming team, and they come after that meet, and they swim, and they get times, and they get scored, and all that type of stuff, and they go on just like any of the other teams. We just don't have an actual team. So that is something that I've always been supportive of when we do have individual competitors. A couple of years ago, Board, you might remember we had a gymnast who wanted to do that. We actually combined with William Floyd, which is another option you can do. You combine with other schools, and we use their facility. So there is one thing I'd like to add there. It's very minimal. Their coach, their private coach is their coach. They have to be board approved. It's not a cost to the district. The only cost, which is minimal, is the bus to the actual individual competitor meets, and a supervisor, which could be anybody, just somebody there that supervises the child. Well worth it, very minimal, and I would strongly support that and ask the board to support that, although I could probably incorporate that without additional budget. The assistant varsity coaches would be something that would be additional budget. Okay?
So I want to thank everybody for the presentation so far tonight. I know it's an enormous amount of work has gone into it, and you know, the ability to look at a 5-year plan and then to go back and look at kind of where we were last year and the year before and what we said, I think is huge, both in terms of growth and plan growth and also budgeting and our ability to hit the budget goals. So, you know, a ton of work went into this, and I know that there's a lot of time that everybody sat and listened, but this is really the roadmap of where we're going, and it might be one of the most important, you know, presentations of the year. So thank you very much.
Yeah, we're about 15 minutes away, so just if you bear with us for 15 minutes, we certainly will done. I have 12 slides. No, just one. I have one slide. This is the only slide. And actually, I was going to go last, but you know, looking at this, I thought it's important to tie in the dollars to what exactly the growth of staffing would be, and somebody asked. So, you know, the slide to the left, the two columns, is actually with Ricardo and I believe Carol, Ms. Perkins, and Mr. Soto, right, presented, and I asked Mr. Soto to add a column into the right regarding dollars. They aren't an exact amount. For example, when you look at FLES, everybody who saw the presentation last week saw a presentation that had a whole, you know, you could have taken it for just fifth grade FLES. It could be the entire gamut from kindergarten. So you can see some of the numbers we'd have to play with. FLES is $100,000. We use that as a starting salary. It sounds kind of odd for a teacher because you have to add in health insurance and TRS and ERS. So we use that number for that. But these are all the things that since you've been here, they are talking about, or at least spoke about last week, and a little bit tonight as far as the assistant coaches, as far as the clubs. You heard about 10 clubs tonight, four at the high school, four at the middle school, two at the elementary. Well, what would that all cost? And it's important for you all to see that, that it would total $733,000. And I want, I'm here tonight just to be as transparent as I can with the board and the community, because I want you to understand where we're at in the budget process. What I'm about to do now, I normally don't do this early in the process because it's so early. However, when I look at $733,000, there's only two ways you can get to that number. Only two ways. One is at the end of the day, our budget, our revenue can support that, meaning our revenue, when we actually have Carol roll over the budget, meaning all the contractual increases for staff, all of the programs that we currently have, when we roll that all over, and at the end of the day, when the revenue side comes in, if the revenue side is over $733,000, you know, larger than the expense side, well, you can certainly have all these programs. Now, we don't do that unless, obviously, we can sustain it. So we're not going to put something in all of a sudden, a one and done. And I think the FLES committee or the curriculum committee explained it very well that, geez, you don't want to start something in kindergarten and then them have foreign language in kindergarten in first grade, second grade, and then all of a sudden you're eliminating it. It's not the way you want to go. You want to make sure it's something you can sustain. But the one way you can get there, obviously, to have all of these great things, is for your revenue side of the budget to have $733,000 be greater than your expense side. That's one way to get it, to get there. The other way to get there is exactly what Mr. Caswell said and Dr. Reggio said. They spoke about their clubs. It's the exact example. To be able to take their clubs and move out something, a club that they have that maybe is not growing, or maybe the student enrollment's not there for some reason or another, it's possibly even failing, and take another club and put it in its place. So it's another way to get there. Now, obviously, all the things we're looking at here are non-mandated things. Nothing here is something that's mandated that we have to do. 2 years ago, we had the Part 154. It was mandated, Mr. Ricardo Sutter, right? You presented, and you added an ELL teacher,
a full-time
because of that. The following year, we added a social worker to the district. That was not mandated, and that was off the survey. But this right here is not mandated. So what we would have to do, the only other way to get these items in, if the budget was expenses equal to revenue, would be to take something out of that we currently do. Some program, personnel, programs, clubs, athletics, any of those electives at the high school, those are all not mandated. And I put personnel in there as well. Administration and music and all the different things that we have. You can take something out of your budget and replace it with something here. So that's the only two ways you can get to this amount. So what I had Ms. Perkins do, and the reason I put this up so early, is I had Ms. Perkins roll over our budget board, and I want you to be aware of exactly where we're at right now. So I'd say about 2 weeks ago, she rolled it over, and what I said is when she rolls it over, contractual increases, very important for all the staff. TRS and ERS, it's estimated at this point in time, but all the employee contributions are in that. The health insurance is in that. All health insurance increases for the faculty, that's in that. Plus, your five-year maintenance plan. If you remember Board of Education, Mr. Kelly, I almost called him Dr. Kelly. Mr. Kelly came 2 years ago, or a year ago, and he presented a five-year, and Mr. Crowell, a five-year maintenance plan. And the board brought that in and instituted the five-year maintenance plan. So when you roll it over, the five-year maintenance plan is in there. The funding for a repair reserve. One of the charges of the Board of Education is to fund the repair reserve. That also is in there. In addition, although it's not a lot of money, right now we have additional asks from the administration. We're going to have a presentation on professional development in a minute, and there's an additional cost to that. With supplies, there's an additional request for supplies. Equipment, textbooks, services, college visits that you as well spoke about today, this reading. All of those things are asks, right? They're above and beyond. Now, those aren't monumental. Those aren't very large in numbers, but that adds up as well. So if you want to know where we're at, board, when we rolled over everything right now, the way Carol Perkins has it, the administrative asks, all the things you have, right now we are $960,000 in the hole. So we are behind right now when you roll it all over, right?
That's the rollover plus that number?
No, not plus that number at all. When you roll it over, Right now, and our revenues, everything's still estimated. When you roll everything over, we are behind by $960,000. That's at this point today. Now, why don't I normally present this early on? Because a lot happens in the next month. So there's many things I haven't spoken about yet. Retirements. Who's going to retire? Is it two? Is it three? Is it four? Is it five? Is that going to add $100,000, $200,000, $300,000, $400,000? Is the board going to decide to access a teacher or not? Is the board right now talking about the state aid increase? We all know now Governor Cuomo gave us his budget. And at this point in time, throughout the years, and I'm not going to give you a five-year average, Carol, you probably could, but I don't know off the top of your head, but every year at this point in time, the other branches of the government throw additional money to all of the schools. Is that going to be $50,000, $100,000, $200,000? I don't know. But all of these things, retirements, state aid, administration sharpening their pencils. What I begin to do now is I begin to have meetings and have each one of the administrators come in. They have their asks that are there. We look at it very closely, and we begin to sharpen off pencils if needed. Not big money, $1,000 here for supplies, $1,000 here for textbooks, but it adds up as you go along. But it's important for the board to know, and I don't want to alarm anybody, but a couple of weeks ago when I'm sitting here, I'm excited about all this stuff. And it doesn't mean that some of this might not come to fruition at the end of the day. But you might have to take some of your non-mandated programs, may have to take some staff, other personnel, and you might have to replace with some of these things. And that's the decisions as you go along, board, some of the tough decisions you're going to have. I would be very happy to come back in a week or two from now and say, listen, retirement date is a certain date that the teachers have to let us know. And if you got 405, wow, that's a lot of money. I'd be happy in a month from now to come back to this group and say, state aid gave us $200,000 more. So I don't know what's going to happen. But I want the board and I wanted the public to fully understand exactly where we are at. The next presentation you're going to have is on March 7th. And on that date, you're going to have the expense. So you're going to see some of what I'm saying now. You're going to see the revenue. Carol Perkins is going to come and give a presentation. Hard numbers that I just said at 960 might change by then. So I don't know how it's going to look as we go along, but it's very important for everyone to be very clear, to be transparent as possible. And just remember one other thing I mentioned. We do not want to put anything into place unless we can sustain it over the years. So that's very, very important to me, because so far we've been able to do a lot of great things and we wanted to be able to sustain them. So that's some of the questions we have to ask in this. And also, we have to look at a lot of things we do, which we will, the non-mandated things, look at them, and are we getting our best bang for our buck? I say it all the time. Every single thing, it's just like looking at a club. We look at a club in December, we look at the club in June, and we analyze it, we decide, are we getting the best bang for our buck? Or can something else replace it? With growth in mind, because at the end of the day, we look at our growth and our goals. At the end of the day, that's it. We want to know, are we growing? Can we grow better by doing something different than we're doing right now? That's kind of the way we operate. So I don't hope I was clear enough in what I said. Questions, board?
Very helpful.
You sure? Nothing? Wow. All right. Thank you very much. You got about 30 slides. And
you're
in college, right? So you could just probably blow up.
I will be as efficient as possible. I know it's late, and I really appreciate everyone hanging in there.
And I want to thank my colleagues, because all the growth and exciting things that we talk about here really doesn't happen without professional development. And teachers are natural collaborators, you know. Looking at the teachers who I know in the audience, and it's part of their nature, it's part of their blood. They do it every second they're not teaching, and one way or another, they're probably thinking about what's next. I meet with my colleagues during my lunch, and we talk about this in a very informal way. That's professional development. And the real goal is the vision, I think, that we have, that we are working towards, is formalizing a lot of that great stuff that just happens naturally and highlighting a lot of that great stuff that happens naturally. So it's not 50 slides, it's really only 9. So there is a, you know, professional development is very messy, but there is a sequence, an appropriate sequence, that if it's done this way, you will, it will have the most effective impact on your instruction. But as you can see in this image, there's lots of arrows. You have your initial sequence, and then there's this cycle, because it is continuous. And here and elsewhere, we haven't been able to always do it perfectly, because of state mandates, things happen quickly, we have to implement things before we really had time to do the right thing in terms of our teachers and professional development. But again, this is, in a perfect world, this is really, say, the four phases of professional development. And encompassing all of these four phases are the content, your subject matter, whether it's social studies, social emotional learning, the process, whether you go to a workshop, you do turnkey training, you heard a lot about release time tonight, or just, you know, informal conversations and research among colleagues. And then the framework really refers to the structure behind you, the institutional pieces, things like my learning plan, budget, and, you know, long-term goals and vision of your organization, you know, our district. So we are constantly at all these phases in different aspects, and that's what I mean by the messy part of professional development. So one of the challenges is tracking it. You know, we're in different teachers are at different places, as you heard earlier when Ms. Horshevsky was answering Mr. Foster's question, is that it's all happening, we know it's all happening. If you have a passion for social studies or you really grasp the concept of inquiry, you don't have to focus on that maybe as much as differentiation of instruction. So one of the challenges is being able to provide that professional development and match it with individual needs of teachers and students. This is really why we do it. You want to improve student achievement, opportunities, and some of the subcomponents of how you get there, and one of the things that you've heard a little bit about tonight is creating authentic experiences. You heard about SEAM Day, which was amazing, student-centered learning environment, which is very, very centered on the direction of where curriculum and instruction has been going over the last, I would say, decade or so, where the students are at the center of their learning. More opportunities to engage in the flipped classroom design. And these things don't happen overnight. They're very easier said than done. Oh, I'm going to flip my classroom, and the kids are going to do all the work. And especially in different structures, you know, try doing that in a first grade classroom with writing, and I'm going to use Ms. Dolly's example, because it takes a lot of time for the teacher to engage in what that looks like, and then it takes a lot of time to teach the students about the process itself, not even getting to the content of what they're supposed to learn. I think we've made some amazing strides in improving our educational technology, and you're going to see more and more about that as we move forward. And, of course, the end goal is building on our, I think our staff is amazing at this, building on what we already have in terms of the collaborative environment. So this is where it begins. It's pretty self-explanatory. I think aside from staff, you know, in our annual staff survey, one of the number... one of the priorities that staff asks for is more professional development. We've seen that over the last few years. Where do we get our ideas from? Mr. Ritchie actually sent out one of his quick Google surveys the other day about PD. They really come from all different stakeholder groups. They come from other Board of Education committees, building level committees, informal meetings, and honestly, most of the ideas that I receive is conversations that I have casually with teachers in the hallway. And I think that is, you know, where it really, you know, comes from individual teachers being reflective, knowing the needs of their own profession, and knowing the needs of their classroom and their students. This is a quick snapshot of the historical professional development of the district. And a quick interesting little fact that I stumbled upon, it's a little intense, I think. You know, according to the National Staff Development Council, those people that really focus, and this is their world, they make this recommendation that a certain percentage of a district of an organization's budget be devoted to it. And it's nice for them to say that without knowing all the other realities of and burdens that districts face. But I found it interesting. I thought I should share it. And it's okay that we're not even close to that. But I think, you know, over time, you know, we want to continue to build our professional development budget. And if you think, if you look at the overview here, we have built our professional development budget to be able to give the teachers the best professional development that's out there. And sometimes it is costly. You know, taking our number this year, if I had to estimate that, we've spent probably half of our professional development budget this year on the international baccalaureate training. And I'll talk a little bit about more of that in detail. But, you know, as you heard several presentations over the last year or so, and what they're getting and what they're doing with it, and to steal Mr. Stewart's term, bang for your buck, you know, they are taking, say, this $2,500 experience and working every day after that experience in a myriad of ways. So it's about the initial training, but it's also about what they're doing immediately with the training. So here's a snapshot of some examples of program-specific professional development. Teachers College, International Baccalaureate, Google Advanced Placement. And this is just a sampling. But I also wanted you to see the process and the types of activities that organizations that are involved in professional development. So with Teachers College, for example, teachers can go to Teachers College 1 day, 3 day, and I think there's even some 5 day workshops. And it's about $200 a day, and you go to Teachers College and you work with and network with other people in the field. It's an amazing experience, and it's probably one of the best experiences out there in terms of reading and writing. They could also come to you. You can, you know, teachers here have unpacked kits on their own without someone coming from Teachers College and done the work together, which I think has been some amazing work. You can have an on-site consultant and coach. And interestingly enough, some of these organizations and the expectations for their PD do cross paths with BOCES. BOCES is kind of a separate professional development conversation, but you can, for example, get a Teachers College trained coach and pay for it through BOCES. And the reason why I mentioned BOCES is because you do get the reimbursement through BOCES. So if you find the right coach and a solid coach, which we have for Teachers College, her name is Molly Feeney Wood, and she'll be joining us again in March, we actually hire her through BOCES. And it's a cost-effective way to be able to get that quality coach and not pay $3,000 a day. She's more around $900, $1,000 a day. And plus you get the BOCES benefit. And we've also engaged in curriculum writing in that area. So just another example with International Baccalaureate. If you're going to International Baccalaureate training, you're going to IB America, you're going to FLIBS or GIBS, these are all acronyms for their organizations. But International Baccalaureate, once you get past the initial training, and with many of our teachers, they've gone past their initial training already, they encourage you to bring in or send out to other organizations like Teachers College, like going to Google training, like going to BOCES for a Socratic Dialogue seminar, which they do offer. You know, so they don't necessarily need you to continue with their, you know, brand name professional development. They just want you to continue with professional development that aligns with their philosophies, program, curriculum. So perfect example would be Socratic Dialogue, because 3 teachers went last year. They came back. They implemented it in their classroom. I actually observed some classes on that. I see that as just as valuable because it is part of the overall initiative of, say, you know, implementing an international baccalaureate program. So that's why, that's the logic behind these checks. And we have Google, we have Advanced Placement in terms of program specific. We have a lot of teachers going to Google training at BOCES. One of our teachers, a librarian at the elementary school, hopefully at some point very soon, will be a Google coach. And I'll talk a little bit more later about coaching, but it really is, you know, one of the long-term goals is developing more in-house coaches, turnkey trainers, like if you say Dr. Flintrace and Mrs. Forshevsky are perfect examples of that. And it's great to develop that in-house expertise, but there definitely needs to be a balance. So these are just examples of content-specific. So you have your programs, you have your content, more general sometimes. We've got a ton of, we've had every subject area up here as, you know, people have gone to BOCES training this year in these areas. And there's more. This is just a sampling. Actually, I want to highlight one area here. We do have a mathematics K-12 consultant slash coach who's really, I'm hoping he'll work with the district for several years based on every grade level, really just to take a look at our mathematics program overall to be able to offer very, very specific assistance, support for our teachers on all levels. And he's also through BOCES. And he's at the bargain of $7.50 a day, and it's a good bargain. So turnkey training and coaches is kind of a little bit of a sticky situation sometimes because people don't necessarily like the concept of turnkey training because Mr. Stewart went, but Mrs. Agoli didn't get to go, and Mrs. Agoli wants to go. I think turnkey training, if it's done appropriately, can be really, really powerful, and it definitely can be cost-effective, but there has to be a balance. There has to be a balance. You have to have the foundation of all of your staff and faculty on a certain level before they can really engage in turnkey training. You know, I'll give the example of not to highlight Ms. Forshevsky again, but, you know, she, in essence, as the MYP coordinator, is one of her major roles is a turnkey trainer. So from the beginning of the year till now, she's probably logged about 130 hours of turnkey training with the middle school staff in terms of developing MYP units, talking about the specifics of the units, actually doing curriculum writing. So, you know, when you, and that's, you know, really the goal, that you want to have a go-to person in every area within the district, but then you also want to be able to, over time, send individuals out for that similar training. So when they come back, that turnkey conversation is even more meaningful. Oh, and this little picture here. So this is Mr. Bolger, as you know, Mr. Schauer, and Mrs. McCormick, and they're working together. And, you know, they're all from different subject areas, and that's one of the things that I love about this picture is that, you know, in the work that they're doing at the middle school, because they're speaking the same language in terms of developing their units, having them work together, I think is one of the unique things and one of the new things that MYP has brought to the school is that it's not just the science department, it's not the social studies department, math department, and so on, is that everything is very integrated and interdisciplinary. So this Michael Fullan quote really just reiterates what I was saying, is that you have to have a blend of all these activities. You know, you really, really have to have a blend of going out to conferences, and you have to be able to bring it back. That bringing it back and follow-up is one of the most significant challenges of school districts and really of organizations in terms of professional development. I'll be honest, it's not always perfect here. I think we're definitely getting better at it. I think, you know, on our level, in our world, what that means is release time. Release time, chunks of time for teachers to sit and work together to dig through everything that they learned at the conference. Some of that is me saying, you 12 people went to Socratic Dialogue. We need to sit down for 2 hours, talk about how you're going to implement into the classroom, implement in your classroom, what I'm observing, and then we're going to talk again. And that cycle really has to happen with every single endeavor and every single subject and every single level. I mean, that in a perfect world. But what Michael Fullan is saying here is that that's how you grow. I mean, that is truly, truly how you grow. So, this is my last slide. And this is these are some of the things that I think we will be doing more of, or we haven't been doing yet, and we will see in the future. This is the goal. And again, I love my quotes in the professional development world. These are, you know, Michael Fullan and Linda Darling Hammond, the two gurus. And the whole environment is organized around teacher learning as much as it is organized around student learning. And I think that's incredibly powerful, because without the teacher learning, student learning doesn't happen. And I think we talk about growing and growth and moving the whole system, the focus on professional development and making professional development as close to that first image as possible is an enormous task. But it is 100% a top priority for us. And I think will help us bring forth our vision of all the great things that you've heard about tonight and that you've heard about before, and you'll continue to hear about in the future. So thank you. I hope that was informative and brief.
Thank you very much.
No problem.
So I think it was great. I think it was good to see how the PD kind of ties into the five-year plan, where we want to go, and then ultimately see the costs of that growth, and have everybody here understand kind of the things that we struggle with. So next section of the agenda is questions and comments on tonight's agenda, the presentations that you've heard. You know, if anybody has, we're recording, but you can step up to the microphone and ask any questions you've got. Are there any questions on tonight's agenda? Any of the presentations? Motion to adopt the minutes of the regular meeting of January 24th, 2018. Motion.
Motion.
Second.
Thank you.
All in favor?
Yes.
Yes. Motion carries unanimously. Is there anything that we need to break out of this? We just get to the next section of questions and comments. Is there anything that anybody wants to specifically talk about? I've reviewed the packets.
No.
Okay. Motion to adopt items 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, and 16. Motion. Second.
Second.
All in favor?
Yes.
Yes. Motion carries unanimously. Questions and comments from the committee on items not on the agenda. Items that, you know, any other items that you want to ask about, want to talk about previous agendas? Anyone? Okay, a lot of information tonight, and all will be posted. Next Board of Education meeting will be March 7, 2018, 7:30 here. Motion to adjourn to executive session for purposes of discussing matters of disclosure of which would warrant or result in an unwarranted invasion of personal privacy. Motion.
Motion.
Second. All in favor?
Yes.
Yes. Motion carries unanimously. So thank you very much.